world. I'm John Batchelor. Uzbekistan, a large Central Asian state with great, great promise. And in fact, a present as well. And I welcome Kamran Bukhari, who is a senior director of Eurasian Security and Prosperity Portfolio at the New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy, writing most recently at Geopolitical Futures about his venture to Uzbekistan, his discovery of this state's place in Eurasian, in Central Asia. These are the countries that, during the early stages of the Afghanistan conflict at the beginning of this century, were regarded as the stands. Well, the stands is not articulate. They're distinct cultures, they're post-Soviet, and they're rich in natural resources, and in Uzbekistan's case, a huge population, 36 million estimate and rising. Kamran, a very good evening to you. How do you see Uzbekistan fitting into Central Asia now and in the immediate future? Good evening to you.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me again. So, look, there's, as you said, there's great potential for Uzbekistan. There is a young population, a leadership that, particularly comes from, at least the top-level leadership, comes from the Soviet era, but really is pushing a genuine reform agenda. They face quite many constraints, and we can talk about them here, but you know, it's worth highlighting that under President Shavkat Mirziyoyev, who used to be prime minister under the old president, Mr. Islam Karimov, who passed away in office in 2016 and was a very repressive ruler, if you look at the origins and the starting point, then you can appreciate what this the president of Uzbekistan, the current president of Uzbekistan, is trying to do and the strides that he has made in 7 years. Now, obviously, Uzbekistan is not going to become Wisconsin anytime soon. And I think it's unfair to sort of measure them against that. If we place place the country in its historical context, this is a country that for close to 120 years was under Russian colonialism, first in the Tsarist era, then under the Soviets. Even after the implosion of the Soviet Union, it was under heavy Russian influence. And the reform process, or sort of the opening up to the world, only began in 2016 when the current president took over from his predecessor. And so in 7 years, I mean, that's quite a journey. They have a long way to go, and there's no denying that. But I think in this moment, even though, the elections were, by Western standards, they weren't very competitive. But again, we can't apply our standards to different parts of the world. And that's sort of the argument in the piece that I wrote for Geopolitical Futures on Uzbekistan and my trip there. But the bottom line is that we need to be able to look at the starting point of this country, and then we will be able to appreciate the journey that it's taken in 7 years. And then, of course, be able to sort of discern where this country could likely go in the years and decades ahead.
My observation of your essay for Geopolitical Futures is you make a philosophical point that democracy is not an end. It's a methodology. It's a process. And you were there to observe the presidential election. Democracy is something that comes with personalities and then with parties and then with contest, debate. They're in the early stages, somewhere in the 18th century from the American point of view. I take that as something that we can see. Can they see it, that there's no rush here, that it's going to take time to develop the institutions of a democratic republic?
Yes, yes and no. And when I say yes, I mean they definitely recognize the challenges before them. They're not in any rush. At the same time, they are looking at the perilous strategic context or the geopolitical environment in which they exist today. The region is changing. They themselves have embarked upon a process that the country is in uncharted territory. It's experimenting. It is experimenting at a time when Russian influence in the region is weakening. Russia's own future as a nation, as a state, is in question. What will Russia look like 3 to 5 years? How does that impact the region? Because despite the fact that the Kremlin, you know, is losing its influence in the region, is unable to project influence as it used to in years gone by, and definitely in decades gone by, it still is very much, you know, politically, economically, socially tethered to Central Asia, particularly Uzbekistan. Then you have a China is trying to lure this region and Uzbekistan with it into a Chinese, if you will, geoeconomic orbit. If that's what the Chinese want, the last thing they want to see is a country like Uzbekistan, with the largest population in the region, engaged in Western-style political economic reforms. And then there is Afghanistan. You know, it's almost as if Uzbekistan is moving in one direction, and the neighbor to the south, Afghanistan, is moving in a completely different direction under the Taliban. So these are massive challenges. You also have Turkey trying to, influence the behavior of the Central Asian republics. And Uzbekistan is an important one. So Uzbekistan's transformation comes at a time of great and highly significant, what I would call, geopolitical churn.
Kamran, you're in Washington and you move in the think tank circles in Washington. Is Uzbekistan known and spoken of? Is Central Asia known and spoken of? So much concentration now on Europe and certainly the conflict in the South China Sea. What about Central Asia? Does it have a lobby or a concerned interest group?
I don't think that those who follow and are interested in Central Asia, in Uzbekistan, are able to sort of compete with those who perhaps follow, other areas. I think that, yes, there is interest, but I think that the group of people who watch this region in the policy space, and definitely in official Washington, is very small. So it's unfortunate, and this place deserves far more attention. But the reality is that we're 32 years out from the implosion of the Soviet Union, when this region began to open itself to the rest of the world. And 3 decades is a long time. But unfortunately, in Washington, we've been distracted by many things. The first 10 years of sort of the post-Soviet era, the 90s, we were still trying to figure out, and in many ways, we're still trying to figure out, even today, what does it mean to be the most powerful nation on the planet, and how do we manage the international system at a time when there are challenges from various quarters, i.e. Russia and China and other places, from other smaller powers. Then came 9/11, and we looked at this region again very tactically. And in the 90s, we looked at it, how can we sort of help countries like Kazakhstan develop its energy exports? How can we denuclearize and make sure that nuclear weapons that the Soviets had placed in Kazakhstan and the large facilities, the nuclear facilities, were secure? So it was a tactical engagement. Then post 9/11, we were looking for Islamist militancy and hoping that we can, that was sort of the driver of our interest in the region and its border with Afghanistan and its proximity. I think time has come that if we are going to manage a Russia that is weakening, and if we are going to deal with a China that has major ambitions but yet has problems of its own, then it only makes sense to invest more resources in understanding this place. We need to have Americans visiting, countries like Uzbekistan. Likewise, we need people from this region coming to the West, to the United States. So we have that people-to-people contact. And so there's great potential.
Kamran Bukhari, Senior Director, Eurasian Security and Prosperity Portfolio, just back from observing the elections in Uzbekistan. He's at the New Lines Institute for Strategy and Policy, writing most recently of Uzbekistan. For Geopolitical Futures, I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.